You're listening to Back to the Light with J.D. Rieger. Hey everybody, welcome to yet another episode of Back to the Light. I am your host, J.D. Rieger. With me on this episode is my friend, musician, songwriter, bon vivant.
There you go. I'll take it.
Mark Edgar Stewart.
Man, it's good to be here, man. Thanks for coming to my house here.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
I like doing these on the road, actually. I like coming to, you know, into invading people's workspaces and stuff and, you know, seeing their double neck guitars.
Yeah. Isn't that wild, man? They call that a Chipson. So it's not quite a Gibson. It's a counterfeit. Cheap fake Gibson. It even has a serial number on the back of it.
Yeah, still has the logo and everything.
I know. So it's kind of like my Jimmy Page guitar. So I'm gonna whoop it out one day, play a gig. So be on the lookout for that thing.
You know, you don't generally rock hard enough, I would say, you know, and you're not, I mean, you know, to need a guitar like this.
I don't. I want to rock, man. I'm a closet rocker. I've always rocked until I started writing my own songs, and then I got all sensitive. But I want to rock one day. Hold me to that.
I will.
Now we'll whoop out the chips into the day I do it.
You have cultivated what I've written down here, a very adult career, compared to a lot of musicians that I know.
Okay.
You know, I know a lot of people that, you know, like I come from a very punk rock world, you know, sleeping on floors and, you know, DIY touring and releasing and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, just looking at, like, the kind of places you play.
Yeah.
You know, you play the Green Room. You just had a very successful show there, in December?
Yeah, in December, yep.
You play, like, the Halloran Center. You've played the PAX, like, your G-PAC. Haven't you played you play a higher class of room.
Pushing 50. That's just sort of, that's not on purpose,
by the way. I'm almost 45. You're not that much older.
That's just sort of where it's just sort of headed, but I haven't been driving the bus. It's just been fate, I guess.
Well, I'm just curious. I mean, it wasn't an intentional effort to play to a more adult, a more refined crowd?
Man, I guess, I mean, if I'm just going to be honest, you know, I heard Garrison Starr say this once, you just got to go where the love is, you know?
Yeah.
And I felt that's kind of what I was doing, you know, and know my audience, and they show up every time, and that's kind of, so I say it was by accident, but yeah, my crowd's kind of getting older with me, you know what I mean? So I kind of have to follow them a little bit, you know, and try to make the most of it. So that probably doesn't sound very cool.
Well, no, I mean, it's hell cool. Who cares? I mean, when you're able to play like really, you know, beautiful places like that and make money doing it.
Yeah, and the music, like,
who's to say what's cool and what's not? Is it cool to be like starving and playing for nobody at the
my bass playing days, I did all that, you know, and slept on floors and rocked and did the buck every Friday night, and those are some of the best times of my life, you know. But yeah, when I started doing the singer-songwriter thing, there's definitely kind of more of an audience for it. It's more of an intimate kind of deal. People want to listen. They want to, you know, they shut up and look at you and expect you to tell them a story. So
yeah, there's
kind
more
of comes off the territory.
There's more of a direct connection with the audience and a give and take. And I mean, I remember when you opened one of my CD release shows, and I guess it was at DKDC, and somewhat like you got. You know, someone came up, one of your fans came up and put like $100 in the tip jar.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, you know, I remember being like, one, a little jealous.
Yeah.
And two, just like, wow, that's, he's really cultivated like a very different scene, because the kind of people who come to rock shows are not shelling out, pulling hundreds out of their wallets for the tip jar.
They're not, but yeah, I've just been lucky, I guess, you know, but yeah, people, that there is an audience who kind of likes this kind of music and likes that kind of intimate vibe, and they come out and they're pay for it, you know, so I just started gigging a little bit differently, you know, instead of just playing all the typical clubs or venues. I always just wanted to like try something that maybe wasn't a venue and make it a venue and give people another reason to want to come and not make it just any other show. Like when I played at Sun Studio last year, I did a show there. It was just like just trying to think of neat places to show up and do my thing and keep people coming. Because, you know, if you just keep playing all the time at the same place, and I noticed my crowd was kind of getting a little thinner. And that was a few years back, you know, and like, man, I got to start trying to think outside the box more, you know, especially when we keep playing in Memphis. I'm trying to keep it kind of creative, you know.
Yeah. So. You seem to really have a connection at the Green Room. Your shows do well there. I know I've seen more than one sold out show of yours there.
Yeah, that's I like that place. You know, to be honest, man, when I first heard their game plan, you know, I wasn't too sure. I was like, what? Y'all going to sell advanced tickets in Memphis? Well, good luck with that. And then it wound up being, it's awesome. And it's really worked for me, you know, like people they will pay for a ticket, and if they buy a ticket on X date, then they're showing up, you know what I mean? So it's kind of nice, the whole advanced ticket thing. It works for me, you know.
Yeah.
And then you actually know if people are showing up or not, so that big surprise, you know. Remember in the old days, you had a big release show, and
it's
like,
nerve-wracking.
Yeah, who's showing up, you know? Then here you are, man, and no one's there yet, and you're freaking out. But of course, people start to show up halfway
through. And that's how things get so ridiculously late, is yep. Like the wait, like, oh, no one's here yet, so we push it back, and then the crowd shows up later, so then the shows get later, and it just round and round it goes.
Yeah, that was the thing that started kind of bugging me too, you know. Well, it was the whole late show deal, you know, because I was part of that world, you know, and it's like, man,
sure,
there's a whole audience here who would love to go see a show at 7 o'clock, you know, and that's when I started doing the early DK shows.
I've been saying that to people for years, but I swear I don't think people, you know, maybe other than you, believe me. But having lived in Chicago for 5 years, you know, I never went to any shows that started any later than like 8 or 9 o'clock.
It's a weird Memphis thing.
You know, like no shows. And I never like left a show later than like 12 or 12:30.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes shows aren't even really getting cooking around here until then.
Yeah, when I play gigs out of town, it's always 8 or 7 o'clock, you know, like this whole Memphis thing of 10 o'clock, then wait till people show up and play at 11:30.
It's
weird. And then that's the opener.
And then you wonder why it's hard to get people to come.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So I kind of like the whole Green Room thing, you know, of advanced tickets. And it, for me, it works, you know. So.
Well, let's talk about things you've been up to in the last year. I know one thing you mentioned before we got started is you're working on a new album, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been slowly working on a new record, kind of taking my time this time, something I've never been able to do. So I'm kind of excited about that, you know, no pressure, you know, just kind of doing it on my own, you know, and kind of letting the universe produce it. So
do you have any particular inspiration? I mean, you've made what some might even call concept albums, or specifically inspired albums. Do you have anything that's driving you this time?
Yeah, there's, you know, in the past, a lot of my albums have been really kind of self-reflective, pretty personal, you know. That last one I did was just sort of a happy record on purpose, you know, after COVID and stuff. But yeah, this one, man, I'm really taking my time. I'm doing it myself for the most part. Will Sexton's producing. And doing it at Bruce Watson's studio, so there really hasn't been a whole lot of planning, you know. Like when I say the universe is producing, it's like I just get a text out of nowhere and be like, "Hey, tomorrow you want to go record?" And I was like, "Who's in the band?" It's like, "Find somebody." And I'm on my phone trying to line up a rhythm section last second, you know. So then the session winds up being just whoever was kind of available that day, which is kind of cool. It's made for some really interesting combinations in the studio, you know, like one being I think the session before last wound up being Sean Zorn on drums, Greg Cartwright on guitar, Will Sexton on bass, you know, and that was a great little studio band. And then, Amy Levere on bass. And then Wills was back there producing, and that was a killer little band. We did two songs, you know, with that lineup. So it's kind of neat to not plan too much and just sort of let the world kind of dictate what's going to happen in the studio, you know.
Yeah. You have mentioned to me a few different times wanting to record a more lighthearted record.
I
think you said your last, even though you have songs about death on your last record.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's got Fishing in Heaven and Coffin Half Full, which is kind of a funny song. But that last record was definitely kind of lighthearted. It was thrown together pretty quick.
I was going to say it's still pretty dark, actually.
Yeah, but it's, you know, that was the one that Reba Russell and Don Hopkins produced. And it was great. I love it. You know, it was just that moment in time. That's kind of what I was doing. It was just really, we did it in 2 days, boom, done, you know what I mean? So it was a moment in time, and I stand by it. I like it. And this time I'm just kind of taking more time with it and getting more instrumental, you know, like there's lots of sounds, you know.
Is being more lighthearted still on your mind?
To be honest, no. I don't know. I'm kind of feel like I'm kind of going back to, I don't know. I feel like I have a lot of things to sing about on this next record, you know. There's, you know, life's
there's a lot going on in the world, to say nothing of what might be happening in your personal life.
Yeah, yeah. Like life has just sort of kind of taken a few turns the past year or two, so it's inspired a lot of these songs. So you know, I always said I'm gonna get away from the whole, you know, kind of sad singer songwriter thing. But this next record is gonna have a lot of life in it. But it's gonna rock too. You know, there's a lot to electric guitar. I don't have a chips in yet, but there's a lot to electric guitar. Yeah.
Do you have any kind of timetable?
I don't know. I hope this year. I'd love to like maybe have a show this year, and we're almost done. We're just gonna kind of mix a few things, and maybe the end of this year. You know, I'm real excited about it though. We that's another thing I've never done before is we go in and we record. This might be too much techie talk for listeners, but we go in and record a song with that band, and then we mix it the same day and we're done.
Oh wow.
So the whole record is
no revising. You're not going back and changing
for the most part. Like it's been real. That's how Will and Bruce work. It's like we got the spirit, we got the moment, we captured it. Boom, everybody go home. Let's mix it. And it's been kind of neat. So now we're up to like 10 songs, and for the most part, every song has been recorded, dubbed, and mixed that day. So it's almost like there's kind of a little energy to it all that you don't lose and just overthinking things. You know?
Yeah.
So that's been kind of nice.
I like that approach.
Yeah. Just.
Do you think you'll do vinyl or
absolutely
just CDs this time?
Yeah, definitely vinyl. I didn't do vinyl last time, but this time around, like I said,
have you done it before?
Haven't done vinyl. I did a 45 once. I did a little single called "Don't Blame Jesus,"
and I own that.
Yeah, I did that a long time ago.
But your LPs have been CD only.
Yeah,
well, and digital.
Yeah, the Matt Jack was doing mostly CDs, and then the CDs fell off, and then like I said, they haven't done a vinyl or record on me yet.
And I was honestly hypothesizing that maybe. You know, because you play to a bit of a different crowd, I was wondering if maybe it was more of a CD-focused crowd than vinyl buying.
That's another thing, man. Every crowd's different. You know, when I go on the road and play, I still sell CDs. It's crazy, you know. And
well, I think a lot of people are turning back to CDs, or I think they did, because, you know, for a while it was really hard to even make records.
Yeah.
It's not really the case anymore, but it was, and I think a lot of people turned back to cassettes and CDs because of that.
I've got a closet full of 45s in there, and I think I sold like 50 on my release show, and I think there's probably another. I think that's all I've ever sold. I can't. Well, when I do my shows, I can't really sell those 45s. It's weird on the road.
Do you think maybe it was because of the subject matter on that?
I think you might be onto something there too. You know, but I think you're definitely onto something about a little bit older crowd. You know,
it was the "Don't Blame Jesus" song.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But "Don't Blame Jesus." So probably a little bit of that too.
But
I'm definitely doing vinyl this time, and I'm looking forward to it. And I've already got a visual concept and all that, and we're gonna see what happens.
Oh, that's cool. Do you know who's gonna be doing the artwork or?
Yes. It's a guy from Oxford, Mississippi. I forget his name. I was about to text Bruce and say, who's that guy who does your artworks? He's really awesome. I do Bruce Watson has the Bible entire gospel thing, and I play bass on that stuff, and he's got this new guy who does his art and did the new Elizabeth King that's coming out. And I'm like, I want to get that guy. And it's real kind of like cartoonish retro, incorporates real photographs, and like I'm kind of, that's the visual I'm kind of seeing, you know. So that's, anyway, I want all I know is I don't want my picture on the cover of this record. Yeah, I just want something cool. I want art or something.
You've done yourself on the cover before.
Yeah, and then it's never my idea. It's always like, hey, let's get your picture and do this. It's like, you know, the first, you know, I was like, I don't want my picture on the cover of the record anymore. Plus, you know, I'm no spring chicken either, you know. But next record, I want a photograph or some art or something. I might hit up Steve or somebody. Give me a photograph. I just want to be,
you know,
a piece
of art. I'm a wrestling photographer now. You could hit me up too if you need to.
Okay.
Yeah.
But maybe I need a wrestler on the cover or something. You know?
Could. You can come down. We can get you in the ring.
Dude, well, I got to get the gut for it.
Well, you
right
don't have
here.
To I'm take working. Your shirt off.
Okay. I'll take my shirt off though.
I mean, you can if you want. We've got some baby oil. That might help.
Okay.
Oil you up, get that wrestler shimmer on you.
Yeah, or help fit into those britches, you know.
Yeah. So you're working on a new album, but you've also been working on a lot of, you know, producing gigs for other people.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been producing other people, and then you also do side musician work.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I know you did one of the records we sold the most of in 2023 at Shangri-La Records, whose shirt you're also wearing. Is a record you produced by Bailey Bigger.
Yeah. So, I've been doing the producing thing, and that's something I've kind of dabbled with in the past.
We have sold so many copies of that record. Oh, yes.
Good.
I mean, probably the number one selling Memphis product of 2023.
Good.
Yeah.
It's good to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah, I was real proud of that record. You know, we just
top five for
we
sure.
We just did that record on a whim, yeah, out in a barn at Dickinson's place, and we just set up a few mics and we just went for it. And then talk about that, the record was done in 2 days, you know, and I think it really kind of we kind of captured something, you know, and I was real proud of that. And we're working on a new record now, Bailey, and we're kind of doing that partly with at the Shelby Foot Mansion and the other half at the Matt Ross Banks place. Southern Groove.
Crosstown.
Yeah, Crosstown. Yeah. So, yeah, her new record's definitely going to be a little bit more refined and a lot more grand and bigger. And, you know, it's pretty awesome.
No pun intended.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, how did you even, you know, how did you get into this producer game? Because, I mean, certainly you have a lot of studio experience over the years, but,
yeah,
you know, what made you think you could run the show?
I don't know. I guess kind of... I'm probably going to shoot myself in the foot here because I've been in tons of bands and I don't know. I always just sort of felt like I had a knack for like arranging, you know what I mean? And I've been in a whole lot of bands where you know, I was kind of be the one who wound up kind of arranging the songs. You know, I wasn't writing them, but be like, all right, this is what we're going to do, you know? And then, you know, and then it would just
that,
kind of
that
be
job
like,
usually falls to either the bass player or the drummer generally.
Yeah. That was kind of me a whole lot. And a lot of that was me and Argros and we were a rhythm section for everybody. It would always just, me and Johnny always kind of had the ideas, you know what I mean? And not all of them, but for the most part, you know, like the feel, hey, let's try this here, this, that here. And then everybody else kind of falls into place. So it was always kind of natural to me, you know? And I think the first thing I officially produced was that James and Ultrasounds record, the first one.
Oh yeah,
Bad to Be Here, and that was the OG lineup with Johnny and Luke White and Tall David, and yeah, that was a killer record.
Oh yeah,
first thing I did.
I think I wrote about that when it came out.
Yeah, yeah, the record still holds up. I think I could be partial to it, but I did that, and then I did.
And then from there, you just start getting phone calls.
A little bit of both, you know. I was real kind of particular. As if I was just saw somebody I kind of liked and believed in, I'd be like, "Hey, you haven't made a record yet. I want to help you make a record," you know. And that's kind of how it starts. It's real, you know. It's not like, "Hey, I want to go be this." It's just kind of I'm into what somebody wants to do, and I want to kind of be a part of it, you know.
What do you see your role as producer? Because a lot, you know, some producers are also engineers and they're very hands on. I mean, are you running the boards?
No. I'm not an engineer. Thank God. With me, like I was just explaining to somebody yesterday, I just feel like I'm just sort of the painter, and you have all these colors on the palette, and I'm just going to figure out how the painting works, you know what I mean? So I'll hear the person or hear the songs, and first thing I'll decide is like what engineer would be best, you know? And because, you know, not all engineers are the same, you know? And so if I'm going for more of a twangier, folkier kind of approach, I might pick this guy. If it's going to rock more, be a little bit more kind of pop, I might pick this guy. And then from there, I kind of pick the musicians, go through all the songs and the demos and try to suggest what I think are the strongest 10 songs, you know? And then, yeah, it's just sort of like assembling the team. I just consider myself more of like the general manager dude, you know? And so I don't really get too up in their business telling them how to sing or how to play their stuff. I just
okay. Want, yeah. I was curious if you were like, you know, digging into the, you know, you should come in here.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like the beat should be more like this or.
Yeah. Everybody's different, you know? When I did the Jed Zimmerman record, that was really hands-on, you know, because he's a good buddy of mine. He just writes amazing songs, and he just came in with songs. That was it. And he didn't really care to do anything else. Like, well, here's my songs, whatever. And he would go in there, and we would, like, track the entire album, and then he'd come in and just sing it all, you know. So I was real hands-on on that. And then, like, with the thing I'm doing with Bailey right now, first record, you know, it was pretty much she just kind of let us do our thing, but she's actually co-producing the second one, and I mean she's come a long way in 3 years. Like she's got ideas and they're great ideas, and she's calling the shots. So there's a lot of we're kind of co-producing.
Yeah.
So with that, you know, I'm definitely kind of a little more letting her kind of do her thing because she knows what's up. She doesn't need too much guidance, you know. Like she can kind of navigate quite well the studio, you know. So
and you work with her brother some too, right?
Yeah. So I just got finished making a record with Wiley, and yeah, that record's gonna be awesome. So that's already done. It's all mastered, ready to go, and hopefully that'll be out in the spring sometime. And we did that at the Shelby Foot Mansion with Danny Banks on drums and Matt Ross Bang on guitar, and I used to play bass and everything I produce. It's just cheaper that way.
Yeah, I feel that.
I said another thing you're producing. You're just sort of the general manager. You got to work within all the budgets and all that. And
like, no, I did the last Subteens record, yeah. And you know I ended up you know chipping in a little bit here and there, yeah. as you do.
Yeah, So you got X amount of dollars, and he's like, all right, we got to like make this work within this little budget. So sometimes you're like, well, if I play bass, then we're saving $1,000 right here, you know?
Yeah,
so
it's, I get to keep that money.
Exactly. You know, if there's a little more money, then I can call in Landon Moore and all the other cats.
And you also did a record on Andy Ratliff, right?
Yeah. And I've known Andy for a long time, and man, he's just a little treasure that a lot of folks don't know about. He's from Coldwater, Mississippi, and he's played in a lot of great groups, and people kind of know him as the bluegrass guy, you know? But Andy's kind of a rocker, man. He's sort of like Bill Stanley meets Jimi Hendrix and dudes from another planet, Arl Burnside. And he's like, Andy, when are we going to record those songs? And that record been in the works for like 10 years, and we finally made it happen last year. And it rocked. It was great.
You still doing a lot of side musician stuff too, like not as the producer, but just coming in playing bass?
Yeah, not as much as I used to. Like I still back Bailey on bass, and I'm playing with Wiley this Saturday at Rail Garden playing guitar, which I don't get to do. I don't really get to get my guitar chops out much, but that's gonna be fun. And then who else? I've been working with Alexis Grace a little bit. We wrote a Christmas song a few months ago, and we recorded it. It came out awesome.
Alexis Grace, she was on American Idol, right?
Yep. And she's one who sang with me up at my Christmas show.
She used to come in when I was working at the Music Foundation. It was when she was on her like run on mm-hmm. American Idol, and I remember her coming in and just like singing in the room. Something like she just, you know, bust out a little Natural Woman or something.
She got it, man.
And I remember just thinking, you know, it takes you know, to just walk into an office and start singing a cappella into a room of people sitting at their desks takes a certain amount of you know, inner strength that I admire.
She's badass. She's awesome. I've enjoyed working with her. You know, she's coming over tomorrow. I'm gonna try to write another song. But yeah, she approached me. I forget how through Instagram, and hey, let's get together and try to write a Christmas song. And like I said, I've never really done the whole co-writing thing that much, but I've kind of been doing it here lately, and it's been fun. And that was a co-write we did, and it came out really great. And it was a Christmas song, and it was just the right amount of cheese, but just the right amount of coolness. And we recorded it, and it's going to be a single next year, hopefully, you know.
That's cool.
It's called Christmas Time Is Now.
You do, you've done a few Christmas songs, haven't you?
Yeah. Oh, wait. Well, if you count the ukulele band I was in, we did a... Well, we did a Christmas EP a few years back for the Philips record label.
Plus, you did a Christmas song for one of the Christmas compilations that Jeff put out, or that I put out, or something.
Did I? Hold on.
I think you did.
Yeah. Was that a Christmas song, or was that me playing with Robbie Grant with Vending Machine?
I think maybe he so. Did a bunch he's of Christmas. He's a yeah. very prolific Christmas performer.
Yeah. Robbie's the best.
Well, that's fun. You know, do you ever, like, you play a lot of shows as a solo act, mm-hmm. but I mean, have you ever thought, you know, do you want to do a rock band again at some point?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you say that. That's sort of where my head is right now, you know, because here I am, I'm making this other record, and I don't know, I'm already like four records in. It's like, dude, that's just gonna be another record about me. That's kind of boring, you know. I was like, how does one kind of get to start fresh again? Because you only get that one shot to have your debut record, you know what I mean? And like, man, I guess someone just have to start a band or something, you know? And
yeah.
Kind of like Jeff Tweedy does a Wilco, or a Greg does a Raining Sound or whatever. It's like, man, I think I want to start a band next, and I want it to rock. And, you know, and I won't.
Do you think, and we're not talking like a solo band, like Mark Edgar Stewart and the.
I kind of want the camaraderie again, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of miss that, because in the old days, I was just the bass player of everybody else, but I kind of want to do that again, and you know, maybe me kind of drive the ship 80%, you know, but I really kind of want to have a band again.
Do you think you could go back to not being the person in charge, like the decider? The person who gets the, you know, the deciding vote. Could you go back to that?
I don't know. Maybe. I think so. It depends if I'm the right people, you know, if I'm with the right folks. But that'd be another thing. If I get with the right people, man, I would like to be kind of a democracy sort of, because I don't know. I kind of miss that. I miss starting a band and the people and all that kind of business. And I feel like I want to maybe do that again, you know. And when I do, it kind of be something a little bit different, maybe kind of rock a little more, be more upbeat and fun, you know.
Yeah.
So. Maybe get to play my electric guitar a little bit, make some noise.
I'll bust this guy out.
Bust out the chips in here.
Didn't you have a band with Greg Cartwright going?
Yeah. So, dude, that was going to be awesome. We had a little super group going. That was me and Greg Cartwright.
You say was going to be.
Yeah, it's not happening. It's been postponed.
What happened there? I mean, is it because of he's got too busy with other stuff?
I think everybody got busy. It was Marcella. It was Alex Green, Krista, myself, and Greg, and Dustin. And
that is kind of a super group.
Yeah, man. And we worked that hard. We did one for that about 3 or 4 months, just learning songs. And man, you know, Greg is one of my idols. I've been a super fan of Greg since like the early days, since the 90s, since Oblivions. And it's funny, a lot of folks are like, really? I don't see that. Like, man, I love The Rock, and I love Greg. I love Jack.
I still remember your first solo record. It was a rock. It was actually a rock.
Oh yeah, that one. Yeah, that one doesn't count. That's unofficial. Yeah.
The Butt Rock record.
Yeah. No, I just love that. So I love Jack. I love Greg. I've always admired them from afar. And I got to know Jack a little bit and played with Jack and did a few records. But I never knew Greg. You know, but I always sort of liked it that way. I don't know if I want to get to know him. I can just be the fan from afar. You know, and that's how it's been for 20 years. And then he approached me like 2 years ago about this project, play bass. I was like, well, let's do it. So, yeah, we did this project. It was called Wilk Stahl.
Say it again?
Wilk Stahl.
Wilk Stahl, that's right, yeah. And you played at like, you played one gig that I didn't.
Yeah, two gigs, that was it.
Okay.
The band had
and two I missed them both.
Big gigs. We played Crosstown, and then we did the Montessori, the River Series downtown. Two fantastic gigs. They're awesome. And they're most of Greg's song. There were some co-writes here. Me and Greg co-write one tune, which is going to be on my record. The group was great. It was kind of like more of acoustical side of Greg, you know, like it was acoustic guitar. It was Krista playing the violin. It was Marcella doing percussion and it was a cool group. And I think, you know, Greg, he's got a lot of things going, and I think it just sort of got postponed for a little bit. So it wouldn't.
Yeah. He and Krista have some other new band.
Yeah. So, not really any drama, you know. He just said, I'm going to go down this avenue. Let's just postpone this for a little bit. So hopefully we'll get that thing going. Greg, if you're listening, let's get that thing going. I learned all those songs, man. Those are incredible songs. Those are 1,000 chords, and I know them. I want to go play them for somebody. Yeah.
I feel that.
Dude can write a song, man. Just the most beautiful chords you ever heard. It's like, dude, how do you do that? I want to steal some of that.
You know, my favorite Raining Sound, or my favorite of his records in general, is the Raining Sound album, Too Much Guitar, which is a jam. I mean, it's one of his noisier records.
I remember that came out, man. It was just like, what the F, man?
It's partially produced by Jay Riotard and Alicia.
So I remember the first one. What was it? Yeah. Break Up, Break Down. That's the one that just rocked my world. That's just kind of like the soundtrack of my 20s, hanging out the high tone and falling in and out of love. And then the second one, Time Bomb High School, came out. And I remember I got an advanced copy. Corey had an advanced copy of it back when I had blank CDs all over the place. I did. You want to hear the new Raining Sound? Here it is. I don't think it was even mastered yet. Not sure how he had it. So I remember listening to Time Bomb High School unmastered for like 6 months. Incredible. Love that record. And I remember when Too Much Guitar came out, I was like, whoa, what just happened here, man? You know, I love it. It was just a completely different kind of a sound. And that's what I love about Greg. It's like every Raining Sound record is different. There's a different vibe, you know? And I remember when he came out with the one, he moved and got with a new band, and I think that was it Shattered? The one that came out about 5 years ago, and it kind of had strings. It was more acoustic-y, and I remember thinking, man, I really dug that. I love Shattered. That's a great record. And then he came back here and did the one with Graham and kind of the Memphis lineup.
Yeah.
I'm just a big fan of Greg. I'm just kind of like fanboy.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's a beloved figure in town for a reason.
He's a cool dude and just real sweet, real nice, man. He was very nice to me, very complimentary.
Well, before I let you go, I mean, it took us a while to get this together. I'm curious, and I don't know how much you even want to get into the reasons why it took us a long time to get this together from when we started talking about it in December to now. But, you know, things going okay for you? Are you doing all right?
Yeah, man, just a lot of life stuff, you know. So about the past 3 or 4 months, you know, my mom's getting older. So you know, my mom had a few little health run-ins and scares, and we're still dealing with that. I was doing a songwriter festival out in New Mexico in August, and I got the phone call that she had an aneurysm. So that's never good.
Yeah.
She's like, oh boy, I gotta try to get on the airplane and get back to Pine Bluff. But anyway, she wound up surviving, which is great. And then that's just kind of turned into other things. You know, you when you get 87, you sort of fall apart a little bit. So I've just kind of been dealing with all that and getting her moved out of her house and, you know, and getting her moved into like a little assisted living place. And then middle of all that, my dog dies, you know, like my beloved dog. So a whole lot of life in the past couple of months. Like, damn it.
I have this written down. I didn't know how much you would even want to get into it, but you know, I'm someone I lost, you know, me and my wife had a pair of cats for 15 and 17 years, respectfully. We lost the first one in 2000, right when the pandemic started, and we lost the second one in, I guess, late 22. And, you know, I still have dreams about them. I still cry when I just randomly think about them.
Yep. It's a powerful thing, man. It's like no disrespect to my dad, like I didn't cry this much when my dad died, you know what I mean?
Oh man, same.
But I lost Joe.
I had a rough relationship with my dad, so there's a whole different thing there. But I mean, I get upset about my cats, about Max and Grace, you know, on a weekly basis at least, if not more.
I get it tore him. I mean, I'm in this room now. Move that door right there the other way. So those are Joe's little nose marks right there.
Oh man.
Yeah, because I would always kind of close the door and then he'd come here and look at me and try to push the door open, you know, because I'm in here writing songs and you know, and now I'm in here writing songs and there's no one trying to get in, you know, and I look over there and it's like I'll never clean that window pane right there. You can relate. It's just like I can't do it. I got the shirt I was wearing, the pants I was wearing, which is a brand new pair of jeans, is like, I can't get myself to wash it. I just put it in the bottom drawer, you know, because I was, thought that was the clothes I had on when I had to go put them down, you know?
So, oh, yeah.
Grief is a weird thing, man, you know, but things like that, it's like, for weeks, I couldn't even look at that without crying. Now I'm like, I'm cool. I got this. That's all right.
Yeah, but at a certain point, you know, it crosses over into, like, you're sort of comforted by the sight of those things and seeing pictures and... You know, and the vet, they send you the paw print or whatever.
I got that up there. You know,
totally.
But yeah, man,
it's taken me a long time to get to where I could even talk about it like this.
No, I get it. I get it, man. And it was funny. So you have all these people like, it's just a dog or it's just a cat. It's like, well, you just haven't had that special animal yet. I've had a lot of dogs, you know, and I love them all, but Joe got me through some stuff, man. Like Joe got me through being cancer, being sick, losing my dad, all that. Like Joe was always there, you know, stuff with me and my wife, you know, and like Joe was just there. He was just, the dude just knew us.
He was in one of your songs, the Hope Joe Is Enough.
Yep. Yeah. That, you know, so he was a real big part of my life and even my little creative process. And I knew it was just going to, you know, when you lose an animal, it's like a chapter's closed. Like, well, that was a whole chapter of life. What's next, you know? So it's scary, but at the same time it's like, all right, what's next, here we go.
Yeah, so. when I saw that it happened, my heart went out to you just immediately. I was really, you know, sorry to hear it.
No, thank you. And I'm sorry about to hear about your cats.
Oh, appreciate it.
I need a haven't had a that cat yet. Maybe that's what's next for me, is a cat.
A cat journey?
Yeah, I've never had the cat journey yet.
They're cool. They're cool. If you keep them inside, you don't have to spend as much money on vets with cats.
Yeah, and I know Steve is way into cats.
Yeah.
Like, man.
If you get the right cat, they're super sweet. I mean, I have a cat now who's kind of an aloof, you know, son of a bitch, but, I still love him.
Maybe that's the next chapter for me, is a cat.
That you can do your cat album.
Yeah, we got a neighborhood cat here called Sir Donut, who just walks the street. It's you know, Natalie Jones. See those on the corner, and it's her cat, Sir Donut. And
he's that's a great name for a cat,
isn't it? Yeah, and this Sir Donut's everybody's cat. Like the whole entire street, the cat's like 1,000 pounds now because the whole entire street like feeds the dude. But man, when I come home after gigs, I can hear Sir Donut just comes up like a dog. Meow. What up? Jumps up on my car hood. I pet Sir Donut, and he moves on. Now I look at my Instagram, see Sir Donuts paid someone else a visit down the road. You know, everybody thinks that it's Sir Donuts or cat, but nah, he's belongs to Natalie down the street, but he's just a cool dude.
you and the wife are all good health wise.
Yeah, yeah. She still was dealing with some things, you know, and me, I'm fine. I'm just, that's like we were talking earlier, man. Got unhealthy the past 6 months. It's easy to do, you know?
It's very easy to do.
So, you know, I'm just trying to, like, new year, here we go. What am I going to do about this, you know? So just, anyway, no one wants to hear me talk about that. But, you know, you just start putting on a few LBs and your bones ache a little bit and your doctor tells you got high cholesterol and it's like, well, what are you going to do about it? So that's what I'm doing right now. So
DDP yoga, I recommend it. It gets you some increased flexibility.
I mean, you look great, man. I gotta get on what you're doing, man.
Thank you. That's basically what I'm doing. Last thing I want to ask you about before I'll let you go is we recorded at Shangri-La back in December a live set of yours, which is going to be available for everyone to listen to in full and watch or listen to in full at the Shangri-La Records YouTube channel. And we're going to hear a song from that in the podcast here now called Throw Rocks at Your Window.
So I was hoping
you could maybe just introduce the song a little bit and, you know, just tell us, you know.
Yeah, Throwing Rocks at Your Window. Yeah. So I wrote that over the pandemic. Of course, it was a negative 48 degrees outside. You know, it was right in the crazy winter we had. And I guess the memory I have of that song is I can remember a time growing up, and y'all then too probably, before we had these cell phones and all that business of, you know, you got this love interest, you know, and you go into her house and you want her to come outside and you're out there kind of like throwing rocks at the window. Now, she's on the second floor. You know?
I know what you're talking about.
I'm not trying to break the window out. I'm just trying to say, hey, I'm down here.
Well, that's what happens in the comedy movie, though, is that they don't, you know, the first few taps don't work, so they throw one harder, and then it breaks the window.
Yeah. But that's kind of the gist of it. It's just like, man, I'm out here. Come on down, you know? So
that's cool.
And the song takes a few other turns, too. I took a few artistic liberties, like we're allowed to do sometimes. But, yeah, I like it. I recorded that with Pete and Toby a couple years ago. That was always Toby's favorite song.
Well, we'll hear the live version now, and you can hear the full performance again at the Shangri-La Records YouTube channel. Mark, thanks for taking a minute. Thanks for having us over.
Absolutely, man. Thank y'all for coming, man. It was fun.
Yeah. This was great.
Let me do one more mellow one while I got folks' attention here. See if I can remember this one. I hadn't done this in a year. It's got a lot of chords, y'all. Goes out to Toby if he's still here. Open the door and let me in. It's cold outside. Lights are froze and the kids been, it's cold outside. January's wearing thin. I have no place to go but stand out in the rain, throwing rocks at your window. That wasn't it. Pull back the blinds and look around. It's cold outside. Pick up the phone, are you coming back? It's cold outside. Neighbors think we're on the mend. They don't even know why I'm in the front yard throwing rocks at your window. Streetlights are on, I'm back again. It's cold outside. I said it once, I say it again. It's cold outside. I can barely feel my toes through the storm I drove. Can you hear me down below? Throwing rocks at your window. Me out here in the cold, throwing rocks at